Hello, I'm Kimberly Dondo, Digital Content Manager, and welcome to the In Conversation With series, a series where I speak to notable figures in the realm of financial services. Listen as they share their personal journeys, thoughts on the industry, and advice for aspiring advisors. Today, I'm joined by Dan Camp, who is Chief Investment Officer at Morningstar. So Dan, can you give a better introduction of yourself?
Kimberly, hello. Yes, I can. So I'm the Global Chief Investment Officer for Morningstar Investment Management. That's the part of Morningstar that manages people's money. And those people in particular are clients of independent financial advisors in the UK and in other countries around the world. And so we only work with clients of independent financial advisors. We think financial advice is incredibly important. And that really partly reflects my background as well. So I started my career as a financial advisor. Okay. I specialized in what we used to call ethical investment. We now call it ESG, of course. But that's when I started sort of way back in the beginning, and then gradually spend more time doing research and running portfolios and hence end up where I am today.
Yeah, sounds very interesting. So I guess you're kind of in a great place to kind of speak to advisors when it comes to the investments that they're picking for their clients and what they're looking at.
It is an absolute joy and a privilege, yes, to be able to help advisors. These are particularly where they're so squeezed for time. And mm-hmm. So the service that we and other managed portfolio providers give to really is designed to just help them have more time with clients by using a professional portfolio manager as opposed to doing that selection themselves. So it's really an outsourced service. It's been growing in popularity in the UK for many years and longer in some other countries. But it's really all about giving time for the advisor with their client. That's the key. That's where the magic happens, when they're talking to their clients and helping them make good decisions.
Yeah. So 2022, I don't know how to say it was a bit of a tumultuous year. What are your thoughts on how this year was in terms of investments?
Tumultuous is right, I think. Yes, there's a bit going on. I think we can probably think about it in one of three ways, depending on how we approach the year. So the first way we can think about it, and this seems to be the dominant narrative, is that it was a terrible year for investors. Mm-hmm. And when people have that view, they'll point to what happened in equity prices and particularly bond prices and all the volatility and the news and everything else. But really, it was only a terrible year for investors that need their money right now. Okay. So if they're about to make a big purchase, or they're about to buy an annuity that's a single price the rest of their life, then yes, it was a terrible year because they saw a decline in their values. It was a really challenging year for investors that have just started investing. And so that's another way that we can think about last year. So for those that are just starting investing, being presented with a tough first year or second year of mm-hmm. your investing career, where you see the value of your savings drop, that can be pretty unsettling. So from a behavioral perspective, from clients making good decisions, it was a very challenging year there. But I think the third way that we can think about 2022, which really applies to everybody else, so all those who haven't just started investing and aren't just about to stop investing and take their money out of investments, then actually 2022 was a good year. Yeah. Because, of course, as an investor, if you're continuing to invest, if you have a long-term horizon, you want the price of the assets you're buying to be lower. And yes, they are lower. And they became lower this year. At the back end of 21, asset prices were pretty high. Some asset prices were very high. It was a terrible time to be committing more capital. Now is a much better time. And of course, I'm glossing over there, different variations, different markets. But generally, prices were higher. It was a worse time to invest. Now prices are low. It's a better time to invest. And so for most investors, actually, 2022 was a good year. It just felt like a bad year because we're conditioned to thinking that higher asset prices are good, whereas in fact, they're typically bad for investors unless you need the money right now.
Yeah. For me, starting out, I think me and my colleague, we were both kind of dipping our toes. We were looking at on a daily basis, but I think what I learned was to not look as much.
Yeah, absolutely. There are many, many studies that show that the more frequently you look at your investments or change investments, typically the worse the outcome. And so it's natural to do that when you're just starting, say, when you're dipping your toe in investments for the first time. And that's why last year was so dangerous for first-time investors. But really, when you have your full investment career ahead of you, starting when prices are low is a pretty good thing to do.
Yeah, definitely. I think also, you know, in the time of that like whole meme stock thing and seeing people like making so much in a short amount of time was probably also terrible framing of how investing should be. It's not something that's just going to be a quick return, you know.
Oh, that's so true. And I think, you know, the perpetual challenge that we all face when we're involved in trying to help investors is there really is no shortcut to securing your financial future. There's no get rich quick schemes that work for the majority of people. So you'll have a tiny portion of people who will make money by getting in right at the start of some sort of trend in investing. But really, that's just a lure for most of us. It just sucks us in and provides an opportunity for us to lose money. That really, understanding that investment is not only always about the long term, but it has to be somewhat boring. If investing is exciting, you're probably doing it wrong.
Yeah. I'm not sure if this is an area that you look at all, but I just wanted to ask because, you know, there's been a lot of focus on crypto and regulation within crypto, especially with the fall of FTX and that platform. What is your thoughts? Have you always been quite critical of crypto?
Yes, I love cryptical, by the way. I'm definitely going to steal that. Yes, I have. And the reason is a very straightforward one from an investment perspective, that an asset only has value for two reasons. First, it has value because it generates some sort of cash flow to the investor, some sort of return that will be delivered over time. And if it delivers that cash flow, like dividends for a stock or interest for a bond, then you can value that asset. You can look at what that stream of cash flows are likely to be. You can apply some risk to it. You can look at the inflation rate that you might expect over that long period of time. And then you can say, well, this is the value of that asset. And so all of the assets that we invest in can be valued in that way. The only other type of asset that has value is something that has scarcity. Mm-hmm. So if you only have a small number of something, and if that something is generally agreed to be valuable desirable, then it has value. And that's one of the reasons why gold has kept its value over thousands of years, because there is a scarcity of it, and people agree that it is an attractive thing to own. And so you have this sort of transfer of value. The problem with crypto is it doesn't generate a cash flow. No. So it's not a genuine investment asset from that perspective. And although the experts will tell us that individual coins and tokens have scarcity, the whole of the crypto market doesn't. No. And so what that means is that the only logical value for the whole of the crypto market is zero. Yeah. Now, of course, that zero is an average, and there will be variations in that average. So some coins, I'm sure, not only have value, but some coins will preserve value. I certainly can't predict which ones they'll be. I can't predict which ones have genuine scarcity. Some people would want to get involved in that, but not me. What I can say is that the whole of the crypto universe should have an average value of zero, because there's no scarcity.
Right.
And when there's no scarcity, then that doesn't seem to to be an attractive attractive investment asset. So that's why we don't own it, because it doesn't deliver cash flow. And when we look at the universe as a whole, there shouldn't be any value. And that's not, as I say, picking on any particular coin or token. That's not something I'm an expert in, and people may take a different view. But we take that broad view and say, well, there's not an investment opportunity for people here.
Yeah. It just seems way too high risk for me
now. Yes.
So looking at 2023, what is your outlook? What opportunities do you think there are for advisors and their clients?
Yeah, so I think the first thing to remember when looking forward is that the future is genuinely uncertain.
Yes.
And uncertainty has a definition. And its definition, which was derived by Frank Knight early last century, is that it is a situation where not only do we not know what the outcome is, mm-hmm. we don't know the range of possible outcomes. And this is so uncomfortable for all of us. Nobody likes the idea that the future is uncertain. In reality, we are creatures that love stories. We love to see narratives. We love to see that narrative of history behind us, that thread of history behind us. And we intrinsically believe that if we work hard enough, we can find that thread of history going in front of us as well. And the reality is that the world is not like that. It is genuinely uncertain, that we don't know what's coming down the track. And so people should be very, very skeptical of anyone that is predicting the future with any kind of certainty. Mm-hmm. Overconfidence bias is pervasive in investment management and the financial services industry as a whole. So be very skeptical about anyone that says this is what's going to happen. All we can do really is think somewhat probabilistically and humbly about what could happen ahead of us. And as we think in those terms, then really valuation is incredibly important, because if something is appears to be very overvalued, then the likelihood is that over the next few years, the price of that asset will fall, and the scale of that fall is likely to overwhelm the fundamental returns that will come from dividends or from growth in that asset or from interest payments. Now, equally, if something is very undervalued or appears to be very undervalued compared to a sort of fair assessment of the future value, then the rise in the price of the asset over the next few years is likely to overwhelm what's happening fundamentally. So valuations are absolutely key. They don't tell you anything about timing the market. They don't tell you anything about what things are going to do over the next few weeks, months, or years. And that's another reason not to stare incessantly at your portfolio. Mm-hmm. But they're a good guide to what will happen over the next 5 to 10 years, which is a reasonable investment horizon. Mm-hmm. And so whenever we think about the investment landscape, we shy away from making any predictions about the sort of big macro events or geopolitics or all the things that are really a trap for investors. And we focus on the valuations of individual securities and industries and asset classes, and try to build up portfolios in that way. And as we look at 2023 through that lens, then there's more opportunities than there was at the end of 22. And that's a good thing for investors. But some of these opportunities are still pretty niche. So, for example, we're seeing really attractive valuations in German equities, much more so than other parts of Europe. The UK still looks pretty attractive, but not nearly as attractive as it was at the beginning of the year, because the UK's held up pretty well, as you know. Mm-hmm. And we're seeing more value in bond markets. Mm-hmm. But in contrast, we're not seeing a lot of value in the US technology stocks that dominated markets and returns over the last few years. And that's because although the price of those stocks has fallen really dramatically this year, they came from such a level of extreme overvaluation that although they're trading at a big discount to where they were, a discount is different from a bargain. You can have a big discount, but it's still not a bargain. That's what we're seeing in US equities in general and technology stocks in particular. So there are still key areas of risk through overvaluation, but there are increasing areas of opportunity. But they tend to be, as I say, these smaller, more focused markets, and they can be more volatile as well. So we really have to think about the risk as they go into 23 as well as these opportunities.
And that sounds very interesting. I mean, it sounds like there's a bit of hope there, which I like that. But you mentioned before that you started off in ethical investing, which is now ESG. What are your thoughts on ESG moving forward? Because some people seem to have not lost interest, but you know that the appeal has kind of dwindled a little bit, or people are a little bit skeptical. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And the challenge with ESG is that it's such a broad omnibus term.
Yes.
People tend to conflate different specific ideas with ESG and misinterpret something. So when we think about ESG, then a lot of the focus of the investment industry, a lot of the focus of the broader campaigning groups is on managing your ESG risks, your environmental, social, and governance risk in portfolios. Risk is a financial characteristic. And so if you invest in a company that is a big polluter, then of course is increasing pressure on that company, and rightly so, to change what they do. There's risk in terms of future legislation and changing consumer attitudes. So there's a high degree of ESG risk in that asset. That is a financial characteristic, and you can offset that risk by building in higher levels of return. But the way that you build in higher levels of return is through lower prices. Mm-hmm. So you would expect lower prices from assets that have higher ESG risk. But when we start talking about asset prices and we start talking about risk, then really that's just a normal part of investment management. And so every investor should be thinking about ESG risk when making investment decisions on behalf of clients. Who would ignore ESG risk right now? So that ESG risk is purely financial. And a lot of the growth in the ESG market over the last few years has really been focused on that risk and reward trade-off. And the fact that if you have a lower level of ESG risk, then you should probably have a premium valuation. And that's been working out over the last few years. But of course, as with any trend, that can go too far, and companies with lower ESG risks can have valuations that are too high. And so that's been happening as well. And we've seen a bit of pullback of that this year. But that's quite different from the type of investment that I started with. When I started in ethical investment, it was all about building portfolios for clients that reflected their values, reflected their concerns. And often those values dominated their desire for a high investment return. So I dealt with people who would consciously give up some element of return in order for their portfolio to meet their values. That's very, very different from dealing with ESG risk. Mm-hmm. And when you deal with clients who are prepared to give up some return or take additional risk in order for their portfolio to reflect their values, that's typically a smaller group of people. It's a group of people that prioritize things in a very particular way. And I think it's fantastic that that group of people now have so much more investment choice than they did when I started on this journey 25 years ago. And so it's great that there's more products, there's more investment choices available. That is fantastic. But it's typically a smaller group of people. And so the challenge is that in the last few years, we've tended to conflate the two and believe that by thinking about ESG risk, you were really thinking about values, or by thinking about values, you were thinking about the entire investment universe of people rather than a select group, let's put it that way. And that may not be the situation forever, but what we've had this year is this realization that just because you buy assets with low ESG risk doesn't always mean there'll be a higher return. That additional risk could just be baked into the prices. Mm-hmm. And that when people are faced with lower returns from portfolios that reflect their values, not everyone is happy with that. And this is a really healthy development. This is just the next stage of evolution. And so people will have more clarity as they go into 23 and beyond about these differences. And as they think more about it, as people become more familiar, they'll be able to better target their portfolios, which will lead to a healthier outcome. So people will become discouraged, and that's understandable whenever you have a change in markets. But actually, I think it's a really healthy development for this part of the market that we're seeing a greater understanding of the differences between values, impact, and ESG risk.
Yeah, that again only sounds positive to me.
Absolutely.
But thank you so much for speaking with me, Dan. I think this was a really great conversation, and I don't know, I have a quite positive outlook for 2023.
Kimberly, it's been an absolute pleasure, and I am delighted to hear you're positive about 23. We should all be positive about 23.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to In Conversation With. We do hope that you enjoyed it. Please do keep up to date with all our new releases via Podbean, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and everywhere else you get your podcasts from. You can also keep up to date with all our new content published on the Money Marketing website, as well as our print edition Money Marketing magazine. So make sure to subscribe. Follow us on Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. See you next time.